Arthur Bay, welcome to a very special edition of The Hours. We've got two of my good friends and men that I just respect so much in coaching and in life, not just because of their prowess in cards, their quick wit, or their sense of humor, but because they're just like basketball geniuses. Mike Nabors, who's been a mentor of mine from afar and in person for a long time. Welcome to The Hours, Mike.
Man, I love it. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, and if you're a regular listener, you know Mark. So we always start off, Mike, with a big question, okay? Yep. So here's the big question. We'll go you and Mark on it. This is gonna be an over-under question, okay? Over-under.
Ready.
All right. Are you taking the over or the under on this? You, this year, moving from head coach to assistant coach, are you taking the over being an assistant coach? The over would be positive changes being an assistant coach versus the head coach, or are you taking the under? The under we would equalize like, all right, there's more negatives than positives. The over or the under? What are you taking?
I'm betting every dime I got on the over.
Let's go.
Yeah, anything. I'm putting it all behind that. No pause.
So what are some of the things moving to the assistant coaching role that you've liked so far?
Get a chance to light other people's candles for a change. You know, I've been kind of stuck in a role that I didn't know I was doing it at the time as a head coach, but I get to make everybody else shine bright. You know, it's not going to diminish from my path or anything I'm doing to get back and be able to make suggestions. I'm constantly in that mode again, and the decisions I have to make are fewer and far between. I'm just really enjoying being able to build relationships with all our players and not have to have the, you know, the head coach crown that you wear. So really enjoyed going back to that. I went back and revisited a lot of those years, talked to a lot of coaches that I was head coach for to remind me of what I need to be doing for Coach Roberts and our organization. And I told you just before we went on, I feel like I'm coaching again, man. I feel like I'm being impactful. I'm, you know, able to drop little game notes and little stories. And, you know, I love being a storyteller, as I just hijacked the first 2 minutes of the podcast.
I mean, take the rest too. If you
like. Yes. No, it's not even close. It's not even close. There's not one thing I've come across that has, you know, the thing that I was worried about, I'll show you that. Yeah, you know, I was worried about going from, you know, the surprise hours, the long hours and hard hours I've never had any problem with. But, you know, when you're the head coach, you kind of, the surprise hours are fewer and far between because you're making the schedule. So I worried whether or not I'd fall back into that. And after 12 years, it didn't take me long. I get it. My wife gets it. My boys get it. My family gets it. And I think as a result, that's why I tell you that I feel like I'm coaching again.
Yeah, I think as the head coach, you have less surprise hours, like you said, because you're making your own schedule. It's one of the best benefits of being a head coach. I think one of the best benefits of being an assistant coach is you get to be the suggestion guy and not the decision maker on everything. And it seems like you're enjoying that. But I would imagine the Sparks bringing in somebody like you with so much experience, you have a lot of ownership. So tell us a little bit about what your role, what you're doing right now.
Well, it kind of changed. When I got to talking to Lynn and Reagan about the opportunity, and you know, I've talked a little bit more openly about it. I explored the WNBA last offseason. There was a couple of opportunities that I got in. I just felt like the direction that sport's headed, you know, the growth of the game over the years and then has reached the tipping point. And then that coupled with the things that are happening in collegiate sports that I'm not good at. There's a lot of things required now of a head coach, it's not something I was good at. Maybe I'll get good at it in time if that's something I go back and do. But at that point in time, I wasn't. So, you know, I feel like along that line, my ownership comes with just what I can bring to Lynn every day. But then I did get us. I came out to kind of be, you know, her ears and her eyes, and help with the numbers. And then we had a change, and I got asked to coach the defense, and I got that reaction from like wait,
you're an offense guy.
You're an offense guy. Everything we and so I didn't hesitate. It's like, yeah, I got this, no problem. I started out as a defensive guy with Coach McGuff and all the way up doing all the scouting, and I, so it's, you know, it was a little bit of a departure maybe for people that don't really know me, but I do have some, you know, some things with that that I get with Lynn on, and we developed the game plan together, and it's been a lot of fun with the world's best, you know, female basketball players, women's basketball players right now on the planet, getting a chance to work with them on a daily basis. Been a lot of fun.
Could I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into the defensive part. I know you're early into the season here, but what is the main difference between defending at the college level and the pro level so far?
Yeah, there's nobody like at the college level, there was always a matchup or two. You could say, hey, we're not going to really defend this person, you know, maybe as strongly as we would the other two or three players out there. That's not the case. You have to defend everybody. And I will tell you this, the short shot clock, I kind of probably didn't understand. We had played in some events overseas with the shot clock at 24, but those were usually blowout games where it didn't matter. It makes a tremendous difference. That extra six, or the lack of those 6 seconds, that's one less action you have to guard, one less ball reversal. So there's a lot of switching, a lot of actions that get switched while the ball's in the air that these guys are teaching me. I'm being a sponge this first couple of 6 weeks in this, because these players have been doing it and I've learned a lot from them. And I think it's something that it's been kind of fun teaching an old dog new tricks type thing, you know, like, wow, why didn't I think of this before? I think it's a good lesson for all of us that, you know, you get stuck in doing things a specific way and you're not the skeptic like you and I both know you are, and I am too, to where you get outside and start looking at new ways to do things. So that's been a lot of, it's been a growth area for me.
Yeah. Okay. So we have a few thousand coaches that listen to this pretty consistently. And the coaches that are our listeners, like, they're just like the all-in deep dive nuts for basketball.
Perfect. They're sounds like us. Sounds like, yeah, a thousand of us's.
So without, you know, I obviously don't want you to give away anything that, you know, in the public face that would hinder you, but like, what's something defensively that you guys are working on trying to do that, like, our coaches that are listening, they could take away and be like, man, we want to do that. We want to get better at that, or something you're measuring or something you're trying to get better at.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like anything else. You manage what you're going to measure, because they're going to do it. If you're a deflections coach, you know, manage that. If you're a gap coach, manage that. There's so many different ways to win this game. And that's the beautiful thing about watching. Now, I've watched a lot more film these last 6 weeks than I did the last 6 years. There's so many ways to play this game and play it effectively. Don't get caught up in, you know, I always kind of crack up when people say my defense. And I'm like, there's a lot of people playing. I get you're putting your touch on it, but just watch film. There's so much content out there that's available for free, you know. It just, you can YouTube, you can Google, you can do whatever, and just watch games. You'll see things. These pre-switches, there's a lot of pre-switching going on. Watch the NBA finals right now. Man, they're constantly pointing and talking out actions that they're switching as the people are coming down the court. I think sometimes we get away. We start spending so much time on schemes that we forget the principle of the thing is to not let the thing go in the goal. Make it as hard as possible and play the percentages. You know, we talk a lot about affecting shots. There's a lot of ways you can affect a shot. That can either be with an unbelievable smothering contest, or, you know, blowing up a ball screen, or letting the kid shoot it that hadn't been hitting shots, you know, without a contest. Don't do anything to discourage that person. I always crack up when my players would, in the past, none of these players do it now, but my players in the past would run at a kid at the three-point line that we were begging to shoot a three. Let them shoot it. Don't talk them out of doing what they're willing to do for you. So, you know, gotten back to just really breaking down every single possession and trying to find a way to do something that can help us defensively affect the other team's offense. And affect, not effect. It's A. I've had to give that talk to a few people, the difference between affect and effect. Affect is a verb. You know, that is you doing something, not just allowing it to happen. That would be the effect, but us going out and doing something. And I've just loved how these pros latch on to things like that and run with it. They've helped me. They've helped me a lot more than I've helped them the last 6 weeks, I can assure you.
Yeah. It's amazing how just smart pro players are. I've got one pro player, Camille Zimmerman, that I work with here locally, She plays for Team USA FIBA 3-on-3. And I just love working with her because she's teaching me as much as I'm teaching her. So, yeah, here, you know, when we were playing Spain, here's what happened. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to use that.
It's, exactly.
Yeah.
Their experiences are just experiences you and I are never going to have because we're not out there doing it, you know, and to learn from the players, you know, the man in the arena talk, they're the ones out there doing it. And I have done my best to make them, give them, you know, the confidence to go out and be who they are and be the team that we're going to be while we figure out, you know, our identity. We're not very far into it. We're making progress every day. And it's a fun, it's a fun thing to see them be open to new ideas too. It's a new language. Again, not giving away trade secrets or anything, but like you know, everybody calls it ice a ball screen. Well, I changed the name of it. I'm not going to tell you what I call it because I don't want, you know, I know y'all have a few thousand listeners and then maybe some Mercury fans, but like we have a different term for it. And somebody said, well, Coach, why are you always changing the names? And I said, here's why. Because I want you to do it the way we want to do it. Like if I say ice the ball screen right now, you've probably played for 20 teams that have ice ball screens. And I bet those coaches have taught it 20 different ways. Maybe 10 different ways. Whatever number you want to take, there's multiple ways. So why don't we call it what we're going to do, and it's ours. And, you know, after that initial jolt of having to learn a new language, and don't get me wrong, we're going to probably go out there and yell ice again tonight. It's okay. But it's slowly but surely taking effect. We had a, you know, heard Ettore Messina talk at a clinic one time, and when they do closeouts, when they close out to the ball, they say no foul, no foul, no foul, instead of ball, 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 ball. And it's brilliant. It's brilliant. He no foul, no foul, no foul. It does three things. One, it reminds you not to foul. Two, it disrupts the player that you're guarding. And three, and I've had countless officials say to me, I can't call foul when they're yelling no foul, no foul, no foul. I just can't bring myself to do it. So just taking stuff like that and dropping it into already highly intelligent, highly skilled. And like you said, Tyler, their instincts and their ability to communicate the game is just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see. And I know it's made me in six short weeks reflect on what I've been doing for the last 21 years, you know, like, wow, I could have been so much better during those times if I'd have just, you know, spent a little bit more time watching the WNBA or gone to a WNBA clinic or there's so much more I could have done. I'm overbeating myself up about it because I was doing the best that I could at the time, I thought. But with that said, it inspires me. It makes me hit the ground running every morning knowing that you're walking into a gym of people that are highly competitive and they are elite in the way that they think. And I've got to rise up to their level. It's like checking your credit score. I was having this conversation with a friend the other day that they're going to check your credit every day. And if you lose a couple of credit points along the way, that diminishes your chances as coach. So I think you've got to walk in. If you're going to ask them to do hard things, you've got to be willing to do it and be equally as prepared.
When you talk about naming things into your unique language, you shared with them why. The name, not what's special, the why is what's special. And when you can unpack the why behind the names, it makes it really sticky. And that's the sticky language we talked about. So like, please continue to do that, coaches. That was awesome. And then just the other thing, Mike, I just want to emphasize for coaches, like you can make some effort to get around good mentors, good coaches, good resources, but just a little more effort can get you around the best. And like the effort, like the payoff of being around the best is exponentially more valuable, and it's worth a little bit more effort to get around the best.
And it's worth being told no too. Like, you know, we called them free rolls. Remember those Zooms we did during COVID, the Zoom where it happens? You know, we asked all these authors and we got told no. I can't tell you how many times, but man, there was this one time Annie Duke said yes. And she came on, and then, you know, then we had all kinds of people come on. We had Lucas Jaden come on. We had, you know, Niven come on. We had all kinds of people that were willing to come on and talk to us. So don't be afraid to be told no in that search. You're going to get told no a lot. And but yes, that extra effort, like you said, the exponential growth is, I mean, think about our event down there with Buzz. When we went down and six of us sat there talking with Buzz, how exponentially we grew that day, as, you know, if we hadn't have got that set up. I still take lessons from things you taught us. I found the notes. I know he does too when I talk to him. And, you know, those moments have impact that lasts throughout.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
You've been that coach for a lot of coaches as well. I know going back to your newsletter when you're at Washington.
Oh, yeah.
That was all
Savior days. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even before Washington. And then, Matt, I always just loved watching you on YouTube, the stuff you put up when you're at Arkansas. So we appreciate that. And I'm loving this. I got to ask a couple follow-ups. Sorry, the basketball junkie on me. Okay.
It's okay. We don't kick off till we don't have the bus to leave till 4:30. We're good.
Okay. Don't miss the bus, Coach. That's a no-no. All right.
That's another thing. The rule was the bus left when I got on it. That is not the case anymore.
I can assure you.
I told one of my
young video coordinators, he's going to be a rock star coach. Y'all remember the name when it comes out. But I said, hey, man, somebody told me good advice one time. If you're be 5 minutes early for every tier you go up, y'all nodding y'all's heads, y'all have seen this, but maybe your listeners had it. If it's one of your peers, be 5 minutes early. If it's somebody above you, be 10 minutes early. If it's two rungs above you, be 15, and you just keep going. So, like, I got down there the other day, and he was already in the lobby. You know, and he was like, man, what run do you think we are? You know, we're 30 minutes early. That's where we think we are for the bus. But I'm not missing the bus, man. I know it'll be – I know once a few of our players are on it, that bus is out if I'm not there. I believe I've heard you talk about 5 minutes as well as far as, like, taking back from practice. I think it was, like, every Monday, take away 5 minutes. I love that. I kept that. I share that with coaches all the time.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You mentioned ice, and you've probably been taught it 20 different ways. Give me one thing. Give me one teaching point, something you've come across as far as teaching ice or any kind of ball screen coverage. Just if you could give coaches one tip.
Yeah. You know, it's just like anything else. I think you they have to believe in you before they're going to believe in what you say. So be credible. You know, be ready to talk about. I kind of have a no what if rule, but, you know, they're going to come up because kids are always going to say, well, what if they do this, coach? Okay, let's teach. So let's be really, really concise. I believe you should teach it 5-on-5. I think you can play small-sided basketball and offense. You know, and I know, I just think you have to teach it 5-on-5 because there is always somebody in a gap or somebody in, you know, a position to do something. And you can't even begin to teach that situation, a nice ball screen, without knowing what the other three people are doing. So I usually try to teach those people first because I think we spend so much attention on what's happening with the ball, which you should. But if you teach it first, they're going to remember it first. So let's talk about the people if they're, you know, if they're building a load inside or a sandwich or a fence or a wall or whatever term you use. Let's talk about those people because they're equally as important to what's going on that ball screen.
Yeah. Hold on. Offense or like the defensive side off the ball, those three players, we call them the three amigos.
There you go.
They're usually the benefactor of on the offensive side because the defensive three amigos usually screw something up. I also think at the highest levels, 5-on-5, because they do so much to manipulate the backside and burn people, create space, occupy a weak side.
Tagger, pin the tagger. I mean, if you just start by showing the ball in the screen, you know, but I do think the two have to be, they got to be married up. You know, the worst thing you can do is your ball handler get up on that top shoulder and get on the, we call on the same boards or whatever, you know, get it going to the side. And then the person guarding the screen is not ready to go, you know, it blows it all up. So I think you got to teach them in companionship. And then we always start with the other side and then we build back to that. So that's my philosophy with that. And then just back to what Tyler said earlier, the why we're doing this. You know, why are we using this defensive implementation on this particular set of people that are using it? It could be different for somebody else, and that's why I don't think you can guard ball screens just one way at the highest of high levels and get away with it. You have to be able to show variety because the offense knows where they're going. They're at an inherent advantage from the get-go. And I'm guessing most practices, I've been to thousands of practices like y'all have. It's very rarely equal amount of time devoted to defense as it is offense. So, and I know skill development, player development and all that stuff is, you know, drastically slanted toward the offensive side. So I think when you teach defense, You know, Lewis Horton was a junior college coach in Arkansas, and he was the first person to say it. I'm sure somebody else said it maybe before him, but he's the one I heard it from. You know, offense is art and defense is science. And you know, science takes some proofs and some out, you know, it takes a lot of talking through things and trial and error and being proven wrong. You know, that's the brilliant thing about science. They're constantly trying to prove each other wrong. And you win awards for doing that. You win awards for proving a theory wrong. And, you know, I think sometimes we don't let people prove us wrong. So that'd be my long answer to your very short question. Teach the other side of the ball first, then focus on what's going on with the ball and be really concise. I love one-syllable words. I love short. I love violent-sounding, cool-sounding words. I think it matters. Some people don't. I disagree with those people. I think you have to speak in images. If you can speak in images, young players especially, I think they remember. I think you use the term sticky. You know, that's a Chip and Dan Heath story about making your moment stick, making things sticky. You haven't coached until they've learned. That's wooden. You know, I say that all the time. The worst, the number one sign that we stink as coaches is when we stand up and yell, "I've told you 1,000 times. Well, then you haven't really coached me. If you've told me something 1,000 times and I'm still not doing it right, you haven't coached me yet. Or I just told you that. That's the other one I hate. I just told you in the timeout. Well, you didn't tell me good enough. I always take that very personal. If I catch myself getting ready to say that, which I still do. To this day, I still make that mistake of, you know, we just talked about that. Why didn't we? Well, I didn't talk about it well enough.
Yeah, I would tell people all the time, telling someone to do something doesn't change behavior, you know? And I was working with my daughter and I caught myself. I'm like, I'm just telling her what to do right now. I'm violating my own thought process. But
I do that daily in parenting and in coaching. So you're not alone, Mark. You're not alone.
Okay. All right. Here's my next one. You talked about roles twice on here. You said, hey, let someone shoot that we don't want to shoot. And then, you know, before that, you talked about, hey, sometimes to guard is to not guard, right? We don't have to guard this player, hard to do at the pro level. Just curious if you want to take this to college level or to your current level at the professional level. Just talk a little bit about defining roles, how you do that, and how you communicate that, because that is something that comes up over and over and over with the coaches that we talk to.
Yeah, well, the first thing I do is I make sure they can spell the word role, because most of them say R-O-O-R-O-L-L, not R-O-L-E. It's amazing how many people I get to talk to. I say, well, can you write that down for me? And they'll write a R-O-L-L. I say, well, that's an action. I'm talking about R-O-L-E. So when we come to defining roles and giving it to them, you know, I after I get past that part, try to make it as concise and as easy as possible, and we focus on bright spots. I'm a 3-to-1. I know some research will tell you 5-to-1, but for every one thing I want you to improve on or have in your role, I want your 3 bright spots to be hit on first. If you're a good shooter, be a great shooter. Stay a great shooter. Don't go home and work on all these deficiency areas and get marginally better in those and forget what got you great. It's been proven that you can still make the greatest growth in the things you're already good at. So let's always focus 3-to-1 ratio on roles, on what you do when you do well already and become great at it. And then we'll pepper in that 1% of things. And I want to make sure it's always written where they can see it. I want to make sure it's been talked about. And then I want to give them facts and film. I say facts and film all the time. I want to give them clips, whether that's me, you know, sending them some high-tech technology or just simply putting my phone up to a video screen and recording it and send it to them. Catch them doing right, show them the things that they need. So they get it in all 3 learning styles. I want it in a printed format. I want them to be able to see it, and I want them to be able to hear it. And until I've given it to them all for that, all 3 formats like that, I'm not going to hold them accountable for it. But at some point, after I feel like we've written it down for them, we've shared it with them, we've shown them on film, we've drilled it on the court, you know, it gets down. Sherry Cole was the person that I heard say this. At that point in time, it's you can't do it or you won't do it. It's just can or won't at this point. You know what we expect. You know, this is how we expect you to function in transition. This is your role in transition defense. And we've shown it to you on film for 31 opportunities. I've gotten away from 31 days because we don't have 31 days. We have 14 days of camp. So we had to do some things twice a day, sometimes three times a day to get to 31 opportunities. So I don't know if there's any science behind it, but y'all back me up on it. I'm going with it for now. It's just not 31 days, but 31 opportunities to learn something. And then after that, I will start holding them accountable. We've done this 31 times now. We should be able to do this. And now it's either you can't or you won't. And then hopefully you'll have a really smart kid that goes, well, coach, it's not that I can or that I won't. It's just that I didn't. And when you can get that moment with them, now you can coach them. Because they realize it. They realize I can do it. They realize I didn't do it. So let's focus on why. And we'll stick with the defense. Were we in the right spot to start with? So much of defense is beginning in the right spot. If you start too low in a gap and the cutter goes, you're never going to catch up. They know where they're going. They've got a head start. They're going frontward. You probably had to help in two directions. So did you begin in the right spot? Did you give yourself a chance? And then, you know, we use the term our time in the air time. Like when that ball's in the air, nobody's got it. What are you doing? Are you moving to the next spot? Are you readjusting your body angles? Are you getting physical on a screener that you know is going to cut? What are you doing when the ball's not being possessed by anybody? So, you know, when you define those roles and you're putting them down into it, I think giving them tangible things that you can then hold them accountable for. I think so many coaches want to hold kids accountable for things that they haven't coached them well enough on yet. And I know, like I said, I'm still guilty of that to this very second, as I sit here getting ready to play tonight. I worry about an action that I probably didn't coach well enough. A what if that we didn't spend enough time on, and that will eat at me more so me than the anger toward a player that shouldn't know how to do that yet, even at the professional level. So I don't know. I think that's what drives the coaches that are probably listening to this. If they're spending their time listening to us talk, they truly want to get better. I would just challenge you to take it very personal that maybe you didn't coach rather than they didn't do. So that's how I break down every game. What did I mess up?
That's good. Okay. I'm just a big summarizing guy for our coaches that make it actionable, because you said some wonderful things. So Mark identified, for all of our coaches listening, like many of you struggle with establishing roles and you're a little bit nervous to do it because you don't want to be accused of putting a player in a box or you don't want the blowback. And so, but it's necessary to create a high performing team. So three steps that Mike shared, I thought one was great. Like start with bright spots. He goes 3-1. Some research says 5-1, but start with bright spots. That builds your credibility. Next, give them 31 opportunities, not 31 days, 31 opportunities to get it. Then, I mean, I just like the idea of having a number. There's some power in that. Whatever your number is like, okay, you're going to get 35, right? And after 31 opportunities, we'll realize, here's the third step, it's can or won't. Get to the can or won't thing. Then they can realize that they just didn't and recommit to do it right. I mean, that's just a great step-by-step process establishing roles. So I just wanted to summarize that. That was beautiful. Okay, I want to get
Tyler, let me say one more thing on that because that's really good. Yeah. I love the can't, won't, but then the didn't part is really cool. Like, hey, you can't do it. Maybe it's a recruiting mess, right? Maybe you're just like physically unable to do it. You won't do it. It means it's a lack of buy-in, like a lack of willingness to do it. But you didn't do it. There's always going to be that gap between what your players know and what they actually do on the floor. Our job as coaches, once we get them to pass the can't, pass the won't, is shrink that gap as short as possible, man. It's so good.
Okay. All right. Here's my connection point. So one thing I've always admired about you, Mike, is you seem to get a lot out of your players. They perform really well. I think some people would call you a player's coach. And I define a player's coach as in, like, can you get the most out of your talent? Are people like, yeah, are they uplifted by playing for you, or do they underperform? Right. You know, we both use the term like, you know, coaching players down. That'd be the opposite in my mind of a player's coach. So that being said, I think you've always done that well. I know this is a very, very small sample size, but I got some stats up on my screen here from our girl, Kelsey Plum, who you have coached, obviously, for many, many years, college, and now you get to reunite. All right, her career stats versus two games. We're only two games into the season. You probably know this. This is crazy. I'm going to run through it. career. So minutes are up by about 8 minutes per game this season versus her career. So I'll disagree. Here it is. Career points per game, 14. This season, 27.5. That's a massive jump. Assists from 4 to 5.5. Steals from 1 to 3. She has never blocked any shots. Turnovers only 0.5, right? But here's what's crazy. Her field goal percentage overall is up 5%, and her three-point field goal percentage is up 7%, from 39% to 46.5%. That's some amazing splits right there. Is there something different with her role this year? Obviously, she has, you know, less all-stars around her. Or is it different in her play? Why would you say she's having this massive improvement?
Well, it's Coach Roberts' philosophy on how shots are generated. You know, it was different than how we utilized her in college. I think that's why you see that improvement. These are all shots that are very, very low self-generation. Like, there are a lot of catch-and-shoot threes because of movement by the other players. And there's been buy-in on that. Now, there's still times she needs to go get a bucket, and you still – you know, she led the league in blow-bys last year. I didn't even know that stat. Plum led the league in blow-bys. So that's an amazing stat when you think about the people that were guarding her. So, you know, I think her numbers are up because her confidence is up. I think, you know, Los Angeles obviously embraced her and her players have. And then, you know, the joining Coach Roberts' offensive style, what she did at Utah, you look at the players she had at Utah, and their splits would be very similar, you know. And it was always players maybe that weren't five stars and maybe some not even four stars. You know, most people don't realize Kelsey wasn't a five star. She was a four star kid coming out of high school. Yeah. So I appreciate the compliment, but I honestly can't take any credit for anything that kid has ever done in her life. That is a kid who works so hard to play those extra minutes, Tyler. She's a pro. She's been a pro for a long time. She cares about the things that are required. And it's why she's represented our country. It's why she's gotten into that elite group of not only just the elite of the WNBA or the elite collegiate when she played, but on the planet, you know, and she has this desire to be the best on the planet. That's the thing that makes her different than a lot of other people in any walk of life, not just basketball players. I've always talked about her ability to focus. She can focus on the main things better than anybody I've ever seen. And that's in business. That's in politics. That's in any form of leadership, and then just bring people along. That's the growth I've seen in her from, you know, her freshman year in college. It's bringing other people along at the same time, bringing other people along. And it's fun to watch. And I'm learning lots from how she goes about doing it, but it is a constant attention to detail that it's hard for me to do because I get distracted by things. I'm one of those guys that could be talking, go, oh, squirrel, you know, that. I'm that guy. Look at that squirrel over there. She doesn't have that ability. She's got the ability to block the squirrels out and stay focused. She's off to a great start, but it's all a result of her work. You know, I tell people all the time, they see the concert. They come to see the show and they see the concert, but they don't see her working in the garage on the band, you know, putting the band sound together. And they don't see all that extra work. And that's what separates people. And hard for me for a number of years in college when I would get calls from people that would say, hey, I got your next Kelsey Plum. She's a hard worker. I'm like, well, let's unpack that a little bit, but I'll take your word for it. But fun to see.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay, I have one follow-up, but I do, again, just want to highlight the ability for all our coaches. Like, this is a great case study as you're trying to convince your star players that they could actually perform better when they catch with advantage, as opposed to having to create their own advantage. I mean, it's top to bottom. I think that's a constant coaching challenge. Like, how can we move everyone on our team to embrace catching with advantage and playing with advantage versus creating their own advantage? So it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's little thing. It's a lot of little things. It's meeting the pass as it's arriving, closing that distance, and moving before the defense does, and having an understanding of, you know, recognizing when a player's in the wrong spot to begin with. You know, we've always said, make them wrong. And that's when players find that ability, the numbers back it up. I've also been blown away by the analytics that they have, you know, in the NBA and that's now the WNBA, that that measure, that can measure distance on closeouts. You know, what somebody shoots against a 4-foot closeout, a 3-foot closeout, a 2-foot closeout. And it speaks directly to what you just said. When there's advantage, you watch it in the NBA, those guys, those players do not miss open shots. They only miss if they're covered or smothered. I call it, you know, the old Waffle House theory. If they're covered, smothered, and covered, you know, whatever they have at IHOP when you are at Waffle House when you order your hash browns, if you can smother them and cover them, they miss a lot. If you leave them uncovered, they're going to make it a lot. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Let me ask you this question, then I'll throw it to Mark. So, you talked about the ability to focus on the main things is a superpower. That's a superpower that Kelsey has. I started to think about coaches and what coaches should take away from that statement. Where would you say, maybe Mike and Mark, where do most coaches need to improve? We looked at the two parts of that statement. Do they need to improve their ability to focus or their ability to identify the main things? Because I think like coaches fall down on what, right? Maybe they focus really well, but they're not focused on the right things. Or they know the right things, but they just don't focus on it enough. They get distracted by the, you know, this new player just came out, right? The squirrel. Where maybe you first, Mike. Where do you think most coaches need to improve on that one?
Probably that. Probably focusing on the wrong things. Yeah, and there's a book out called It's Not About the Shark by David Niven. It's older, but it is a brilliant book and obviously references the Jaws movie where in Spielberg, you know, she completely changed the way they shot the movie Jaws because they were about to run out of money because he couldn't get the shark to work. So he just overnight said, okay, well, we're just going to not show the shark for 81 minutes of the movie. And most people don't realize that Jaws, you don't even see the shark because they couldn't get it to work. It's an unbelievable story, but I think we all do that. There's a great line in Moneyball, the great scene where the scouts are going at it and he's going, you're not even looking at the problem. The problem is not that we have to replace 37 home runs and, you know, 138 RBIs. It's, you're not looking at the problem. So I think that's the area that we all fall down on. I would bet it's a vast majority, because I do think we all try to focus. I think we all try to be organized. As I sit here and look at all my roadies boxes, these are all my boxes I travel with. I look like a roadie when I unpack. Everybody's giving me a hard time about it. But like, you can be organized and focused, but if the wrong stuff's in those notebooks, it's irrelevant. So you have anybody that's listening's got their money's worth today by you dropping that line and ask. And the only way you know that is to ask.
Yeah.
You know, ask other people's opinions.
Yes. You cannot identify it yourself. No. Nope. You've already made your decision by what you're focusing on. You think they're the most important things. You can't identify it from inside the box.
You cannot.
Yeah.
And that's help. You need help, or you need a moment. You need something to happen to jolt you into you know, having perspective. And you know, Mark, I think maybe you can agree with this because I think you're the same. But like, I'm skeptical about everything. You know, I don't care what it is. Even if I maybe agree with it, I still want facts and film. I still need to have more information. I'm not ever going to talk about something I don't feel like I have as much or more information than the person I'm talking to with. Not walking into a conversation downstairs in the lobby, I heard over going while I was eating my lunch today, they were talking about cryptocurrency. I know nothing whatsoever. But I think about coaches sometimes. We throw our opinions in there where we know nothing about maybe the situation. I think learning to keep your mouth shut and learn from the people you're around is valuable. And like, that's why I jump on these things and do things. I learn something every time I talk to Tyler. There's something I will use in the next 3 or 4 games because I know that that's going to be, you know, when he mentioned this, I know I'm going to be better for it. And if I can say 1 or 2 things that help somebody else, then that's how this whole cycle works. And it's how we keep feeding and pouring into each other and, you know, taking care of coaches. We need all the help we can get. Can't do them all. Can't do everything. But if I can take 1 or 2 nuggets from this and help our team win 1 game, then it's been a good use of my time this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. Mark, you have 1 or 2 follow-ups. I know we'll try to get Mike out of here in the next 5 minutes or so.
If we could teach you anything about crypto, is that Bitcoin is at an all-time
high? Well, that's what got me on it. I read that they hit an all-time high, and I'm saying they're taking back to the – when was the first time I heard about it? you know, and what was I doing? And did I have enough money at that point in time to even buy one? And, you know, I still don't know very much about it. I mean, I'm highly intrigued about it for my children. I don't think it'll ever affect me, but
how many months ago? It was probably like 8 months ago. I told everyone buy Bitcoin, and we got a message from one of our listeners. He's like, Tyler, I've been tracking it. If everyone had bought Bitcoin back when you told us to, we would have doubled our money.
Right. No, it's, believe me, it is something that I'm very intrigued by, but because I don't know anything about it, it scares me to death. So I was over here in a conversation. It was at a very, very high level. And I thought, you know, I've been in coaching situations to this too, where I get in a conversation, and I still just keep your mouth shut and try to learn as much as you can.
Well, I'm going to text you a 2-minute summary, which will let you teach you everything you need to know about Bitcoin. I'll text you.
Great. I'm in.
Two minutes. If you can explain it in 2 minutes,
yes,
you know it really well.
Yeah. So, the elevator pitch. I love it.
That's right. What do you got?
I was going to say this. If we could relate Bitcoin to basketball or to coaching, I read something the other day. Maybe it was like a James Clear thing, but it was like, hey, just get started. You know, if you want to get into Bitcoin, just buy like $5 or something. But with coaches, a lot of coaches that we talk to, it's they'll say, well, we want to play this style, but, you know, we're not there yet. Or we're, it's just like, hey, start coaching it now. So when you are there, you've got 3 or 4 years of experience doing it. And then just going back to focus, you know, I find a lot of coaches focus on problems, not solutions, and they will try to find new things. Like, oh, we didn't score a lot this game. Instead of figuring out, like, what did the defense do to disrupt us? It's, let me go on Twitter and find a new play so we can score more points next game. And that's where the distraction goes in. But again, like discipline, Kelsey Plum, like, hey, since Tyler and I went to Vegas and he just challenged me on Bitcoin, since then, I got a recurring payment. I buy $5 every single day.
Awesome.
And so I got started and I stayed the course. And that would be my advice.
That's going to be my pregame deal. You just said something. You asked for an example about not focusing on the problem. This one hit me. Like, I had this conversation with somebody about improving rebounding. And they were like, can you give me some drills to help us improve rebounding? And I gave them drills to guard the ball better. And they were like, no, you misunderstood. I wanted
the out of rotation.
I wanted drills to rebound better. I said, yeah, that's what I just gave you. Because if you can guard the ball better, then we're going to be boxing out likes. And you're going to, it's stuff like that, that we don't look at it's the Mr. Miyagi. People walk in my office and I've got a picture of Pat Morita, you know, on my wall. And they're like, what's he doing up there? I'm like, he was a coach. The wax on, wax off scene. Daniel had no idea he was learning, but he was teaching. And like, that's it. I mean, you want to improve your rebounding? Guard the ball better. You want to guard your yard. Don't let somebody by you. Don't get into rotation. Don't get to where you got two people on the ball and somebody's rebounding without a box and hit. And, you know, they were expecting some brilliant genius hit and get drill, you know, off of the Tom Izzo video. Well, those are great too, but if you'll guard the ball better, then you don't have to do any of that. So that's back to my point about us not being able to identify the problem sometimes. Sorry to hijack you.
No, that's good. Okay. College versus pro. Do you see players continue to improve at the pro level? Are they closer to their cap? How would you compare those two?
I'm not sure I've been in it long enough to be very good, but here's what I would say. Yes is the answer. They have more time. They have more resources, which I think is the key. We all have the same amount of time, but the resources are better. They're able to, but yes, the improvement, just players that I coached against at other schools throughout the last 10 or 15 years that I had an opinion about, but now I see them live and in person, 4 feet in front of me, I'm blown away at how far some of them have come even since they were in their college days. I think the people that are in this league have improved or they're gone. This is the hardest job for a player. It's the hardest job to get. There's 12 roster spots, maybe 11 on some rosters, and there's 13 teams. You know, do the math on how hard it is to even get one of these roster spots. So yes, the players that are here have continued to improve, some drastically improve. And there's no way you survive at the highest level, whatever your highest level is, it may be the junior high varsity team may be the highest level for you right now. You're not, what's good, what got you there is not going to keep you there. That somebody wrote that book and titled it, you know, that's 100% true, but I think more so in basketball because, you know, you got to play both sides of the ball. You have to play offense and defense. You may have to guard somebody bigger than you, faster than you, smaller, you know. Sometimes it's hard guarding somebody that's smaller than you. You know, everybody talks about, oh, I got to guard this kid that's bigger than me. Well, it's just as equally as hard to guard somebody not your size. That's what I tell them. So, yes, improvement has been the separator, I would tell you. When I look at these players, the kids, the players, and I'm still calling them kids, and I forget that they're 30 and 35. Some of these kids are not kids anymore. But these players, their desires, once it becomes a professional sport, as their purpose for playing is a little bit different, it's creeping into the college game because of the rev share and the NIL. But it's still, it's just, a confluence of where maturity is hitting, understanding. They're kind of figuring out life. A lot of them have families. They're figuring it all out at the same time. And it's kind of fun to see that stage. I've not seen in my first 30, this is, I think, year 33. It's kind of weird. I got two seasons in 1 year. I was asking somebody, does this count as a new season for me? Or do I just have like part A and part B? But it's been enlightening. It's been an area of growth for me. You know, almost to that point, and I'll admit it, you get to that point before you think you know everything, and that's when you really start to learn. It starts teaching. Like, I'd gotten pretty comfortable in my role as a Division I head coach. I'd gotten pretty comfortable in my routine. And, you know, had it not been for a few friends keeping me honest, I probably wouldn't have been learning at all. But I think my learning rate slowed down, and I'm really not happy with myself about it. But I think the last 3 or 4 years, I kind of became that coach Mark that and Tyler that was focused on the things that was going wrong. Like, this is what's wrong with NIL. This is what's wrong with God, rather than what we can do. So it's invigorating. I feel a lot of people that have seen me in the last 6 weeks have said, you know, hey, it looks to me like you got your energy back and you're not being drugged down by some of those things. But it's not the things that were dragging me down. It's me letting them. You know, we tell our kids it's not what happens to you, how you react to it. And then I probably wasn't following that advice. I got to let it where it would bog me down. So, if anybody's in that boat, if anybody's in that, and I've talked, you know, with friends about this, I'll talk, and y'all are friends, so I'll tell you, but like, you know, that was a dream job of mine to be at Arkansas. And I think I could have taken it one way or the other. I could have laid around and took a year off and kind of lick my wounds or whatever, or you jump right back in and start coaching. And I just didn't know any other way than jump right back in and start coaching and try to challenge myself. This is a tremendous challenge to walk in there every day. And I think as coaches, we all need to find that challenge. So if there's people out there that won 4 or 5 state championships in a row or 4 or 5 youth leagues or conference championships, you know, find somebody to jolt you. Don't get stagnant, or, you know, you might find yourself not being able to get to do your dream job for a while. Find a new dream, you know. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, we can tell that this has jolted you. I feel it, man, all the way across the country. And I was really excited when I saw the news come across just of your move. And we're glad that it's been positive for you, and we're excited for you. And I know we appreciate your time so much. I know everybody listening is going to take a ton from that.
That'd be great.
So much.
Well, you know, y'all can always share my cell phone number, Tyler, if y'all want to. And the YouTube channel is, you know, the Razorback one's probably going to be up forever and ever, but we're working on getting one started out here to share some things and do some clinic topics and some other talking points. So the newsletter still lives someplace out there on the internet. If somebody ever needs anything, you know, my email address is pretty readily available on the internet, and happy to share anything, because until you share it, it's not yours. You know, we all talk about that. If you don't write it down and you're not having people, you know, peer review it and be skeptical with you and have those conversations, then, you know, it's probably not going to stand the test of time. So I appreciate what y'all do, because it challenges me to be better every single day.
Awesome. I really appreciate it. I would agree with what Mark said. Like, I just feel your energy.
You're pumped up. I'm excited for you, just like personally as a friend. Like, I think you're in a great place.
I appreciate it. If you could see my boys, you would know they are too. They look like they were born to live on Hermosa Beach and walk the sands and be in the water. They got that long blonde hair and the hats backwards and sunglasses. They're living their best lives.
Well, nice. I'm bringing my family out to California later this summer to hit you up, and they can play some catch on the beach or something. All right, let's do it. All right, let's get out of here on this. 30 seconds or less, we'll each go. One 30-second reminder to high school coaches, all right? One thing that you would like just high school coaches to know. Here's mine. Get around people in situations that make you a little bit uncomfortable. If you're hesitant to do it and it's uncomfortable, you should just dive right in, because the greatest growth comes in those areas. So get uncomfortable. Mark.
Stop putting arbitrary deadlines on yourself. So many coaches are trying to cram in to get everything in over the summer, or, you know, we got to get all this stuff in. It's like, hey, no one put a deadline on anything for you. I think you even said it earlier, Mike, is like, it takes time, right, in order to get this stuff. So give yourself some time, be patient, don't skip steps. Just enjoy the process.
Y'all follow those for sure. Those, then I write it down and share it. If until you write it down, if it's just in your head, it's still not yours yet. It's a mixture of somebody's else. Write it down. That forces you to think it through. It forces you to, you know, be concise and take words out and use commas and you know, the right punctuation, and then share it with somebody. Because until you share it, it's still not yours. You know, make it yours by sharing it. Then it's yours forever. So make sure it's right.
I love it. And that is how you affect others and see defects in others. We got some grammar here today. So
you're welcome.
These are my friends, Mark and Mike. This is the Hours Podcast. Until next time, stay savvy.